and tap into Cody's feed. This might not be related to us. He's obviously making a show of having captured Stormwind and...
Sparks!
What?
Mizzy asked. Prof was glowing. The pale green light spread from him as he turned in place on the street.
Are you going to come out?
He bellowed.
I know you are here. Show yourselves!
I hated hearing Prof's voice sound so... like an epic. He'd always been gruff, but this was different. Imperious, demanding, angry. I held the handgun in a sweaty grip. Behind me, one of the children whimpered.
I'm going to lead him away, I whispered.
What?
Megan demanded.
There isn't time, I said, standing up. If he starts ripping apart the area looking for me, he'll kill people. I've got to draw his attention.
David, no, Megan said. I'm coming your way, just... Prof thrust his arms forward, toward the building in front of him. Not mine, but an apartment complex across the street. It was some 8 stories high, constructed entirely of pink and gray salt. And at Prof's gesture, it vaporized. In New Cago, I'd seen him do incredible things with his powers. He'd faced down an enforcement squad, destroying their weapons, bullets, and armor as he fought. But that had been nothing compared to this. He disintegrated an entire building into dust in an eye blink. Prof's powers destroyed not only the salt structure, but the furniture inside it as well, leaving people and personal effects to plummet. The people hit the ground with awful thuds and cries of pain, except for one who remained flying in the air about 20 feet up. He leveled a pair of Uzis at Prof and fired. The bullets had no effect, of course. In an instant, the hovering man was surrounded by a glowing green sphere. He dropped his guns, feeling at the walls of his new prison in a panic. Prof made a fist. The sphere shrank to the size of a basketball, crushing the epic inside into a pulp. I looked away, suddenly sick. That was what he had done to XL and Val.
False alarm, Cody said over the line, sounding relieved. He's not looking for us. He's hunting epics who still follow Larsener.
Prof released the sphere and dropped the remnants of the dead epic to the ground with a nauseating splat. From a shop next to mine, someone else stepped out onto the street, a young man, still a teenager, in a loose necktie and a hat. He stood facing Prof for a moment, then dropped to one knee, bowing. A sphere of light appeared around him. The young man looked up in a panic. Prof held out a single palm, as if weighing the newcomer. Then he swiped his hand to the side, and the sphere vanished.
"Remember that feeling, little epic," Prof said. "You are the one they call Dynamo, I believe. I accept your allegiance, tardy though it is. Where is your master?"
He gulped, then spoke.
"My former master?"
the youth asked, his voice breaking.
"He is a coward, Lord. He runs from you."
"He was with you earlier today,"
Prof said.
"Where did he go?"
The youth pointed along a street, hand shaking.
"He has a safe house 1 street over. He forbade us to join him. I can show you."
Prof gestured, and the youth ran past him on wobbly legs. Prof clasped his hands behind his back and started to follow at a stroll, but paused. My breath caught in my throat. What was wrong? Prof took a few steps in my direction, then knelt, looking at the crate I'd dropped earlier. It had cracked open at the side. He nudged it with his foot and seemed contemplative.
"Lord?"
the youth asked. Prof turned away from the crate and swept after the youth, his lab coat rippling at the motion. The force field carrying Stormwind followed like an obedient puppy. The woman inside didn't look up. I relaxed, slumping against the wall, and lowered my gun.
"Mizzy," I whispered over the line. "He's coming your direction."
"Sounds like he's searching for Larsener," Megan said over the line. We've managed to stroll right into his final throwdown with the city's former leader. How delightful for us.
I'm following him with my scope, Cody said. But I won't be able to see much as he moves to the next street. You want me to maintain surveillance, lad, or stand down?
Being this close to him is dangerous, Abraham said. If he so much as glimpses one of us.
Yeah, Cody said. But I sure would like to know what he's capable of before we try to bring him down. That thing he did with the building, that makes the tensors look like a child's toy by comparison.
Nice metaphor, I said absently. We need to know the results of his face-off with Larsener, if it happens. Cody, see if you can get in position. Mizzy, I do want you out of there.
Trying, she said, grunting. I'm pressed into a room with a lot of people and... Blah! I don't know how quickly I can get out, guys.
Well, we weren't going to fall back while one of our own was in danger. Megan, be ready for a distraction. Abraham, stay with Megan. I took a deep breath. I'm going to tail Prof. Nobody objected. They trusted me. I shouldered my pack. There was no time to assemble my Gottschalk, and stood up beside the doorway, peeking through the fluttering cloth draping. Before ducking out, I glanced at the room's other occupants. All of them, the man with his children, the woman who had talked to me earlier, were staring at me with dumbfounded expressions.
"Did you say you're going after that epic?" the man demanded. "Are you insane?"
"No," the woman said softly. "You're one of them, aren't you? The ones who fight. I heard you were all killed in New York." "Don't tell anyone you saw me, please," I said. I saluted them with a lift of my gun, then slipped out onto the empty street. I stopped to nudge the box that Prof had paused beside. The crate I'd dropped. It was filled with foodstuffs, the packaged kind you had to trade to get, that came from cities that still had factories. Beans, canned chicken, soda. I nodded, then hurried in the direction Prof had gone. 15. All right, I said, pulling up beside the wall of an alleyway, my pistol in a two-handed grip before me. Let's play this very, very carefully. Our primary objective is to make sure Mizzy extracts safely. Information gathering comes second. A sequence of Rogers came over the line. I tapped my mobile screen into Cody's feed. Our earpieces, which had a part that curled over the ear and pointed forward, could give any of us a view of what another one of us was doing. He was moving down a dark hallway. Diaphanous light seeped through the wall to his right, like a flashlight shining inside someone's mouth. He reached a room that still had a salt door. I was surprised when he shoved it that it moved. He slipped inside and crept up to a window. He broke the salt there, which proved more difficult than I'd have guessed, with the butt of his rifle, then poked the gun out. When he patched through the feed from his scope instead of his earpiece, it gave us a vantage from several stories up. The market was easy to spot. It was an old parking garage, the sides draped with colorful cloths and awnings that spread out onto the streets around it. "Yeah," Mizzy said as Cody focused on it. "I'm in there. Got pushed down onto one of the lower levels by the crowd. I'm trying the stairwell now. Still a lot of people hiding in here." Prof was heading right for the market, the green glow of his force fields lighting up the street. I followed a parallel path down a smaller side street, eventually taking cover beside some bushes made of pink salt. In fact, this bush was still growing. I stared, momentarily transfixed by the little salt leaves sprouting out of tiny branches like crystals. I'd assumed that things grew up on the leading edge of the city, stopping once they matched the way Atlanta had once been, then remained static. It seemed that parts of the inner city were still developing.
"David?"
a voice whispered. I turned to see Megan and Abraham scrambling up to me. "Right, right. Friend and mentor on a murderous rampage. I should probably remain focused."
"Megan," I said, "a little more cover might be nice."
She nodded and concentrated for a moment. In an eye blink, the bushes in front of us became far more dense. It was an illusion. a shadow pulled from another world where those shrubs were more dense. But it was perfect.
Thanks,
I said, taking off my pack and quickly assembling my rifle.
Prof strode out onto the street a short distance from us. The teenage epic I'd seen earlier led him, gesturing as they walked. Stormwind's bubble had been parked at the mouth of an alleyway and left there hovering. The younger epic with Prof, Dynamo? I wasn't sure what his powers were. In a city like this, there would be dozens of lesser epics, and I didn't have them all memorized. Dynamo pointed toward the ground, then toward the market. Prof nodded, but I was too far away to hear what they said.
An underground room, Abraham whispered. That has to be the safe house. An office linked to the parking garage, perhaps.
Can there be basements in this city? I asked.
Shallow ones, Abraham said, tapping the ground with his foot. Depending on the area, Yldithia can grow up on a mass of salt rock that's several stories high in some places. It replicates the landscape of the original Atlanta, filling in holes and creating hills. It's as shallow as a few feet elsewhere, but this is a thick portion. Did you notice this slope while we walked to the warehouse?
I hadn't. Mizzy, I said. He might be coming in there. Status?
Trapped, she whispered. Stairwell is packed. Everyone and their dog thought to hide in here. Like, seriously, there are four dogs. I can't find a way out.
Prof didn't follow the young epic toward the parking garage. He strode farther down the street and swept both hands before himself. The street melted away. The salt became powder, and that blew off in a gust of air that Prof created by quickly pushing two concave force fields. The rest drained away into a hollow space below, leaving behind a set of stairs that Prof walked down without breaking stride.
It was amazing. I'd studied epics, come up with my own systems of categorization. I admit I was a little obsessed, in the same way that a million preschoolers asking questions over and over at the same time might be a little obnoxious.
Prof's power was unique. He didn't just destroy matter, he sculpted it. It was beautiful destruction, and I found that I envied him. Once I'd held that power, gifted to me. After Steelheart's death, Prof had stopped doing that so much. I'd had the spiral to keep me entertained, but I could see that even then, he'd been withdrawing from us. It was the time he saved me from enforcement, I realized. That was the beginning of the problems. I'd started him down this path. I knew I couldn't take all the blame. Regalia's plot to turn Prof would probably have happened whether or not I had joined the Reckoners. But neither could I deny responsibility.
Mizzy, I said over the line, hold tight. You might be safest in there after all.
Prof stepped down into the chamber he'd uncovered, but Cody's vantage from above let us watch on our mobiles. Prof didn't descend far before turning around and striding up again, dragging someone by the collar. Back on the street, he tossed the person aside. The figure fell limply to the ground, neck at an unnatural angle.
A decoy!
Prof barked. His voice carried through the square.
Larsener is a coward, I see.
Decoy, Megan said, taking my rifle from me and zooming in on the body.
Oh, I whispered, excited. Larsener absorbed Dead Drop. I wondered if he was ever going to do that.
Talk normal person knees, Megan said. Dead Drop? An epic who used to live in the city. He could make copies of himself, kind of like mitosis, but Dead Drop could make only a few at a time. Three, I think. The copies each retained his other powers, though. And, well, you know how Larsener is...
The other two looked at me blankly.
He's an assumer. Don't you know what one does?
Sure, Cody said over the line. Makes an ass out of you and Myrrh. Hate that guy.
I sighed. You people know very little for being a specialized team trained to hunt epics.
Maintaining lists of epics and their powers was Tia's job, Abraham said. Now yours. And we haven't had our briefing.
After a few days in the city spent investigating who was here and who wasn't, I had planned to sit them down and explain all the epics they needed to watch for. I probably should have prepped them for Larsener early. We'd been too focused on Prof. An assumer, I said, is the opposite of a gifter. Larsener steals powers from other epics. It's his one natural ability. But he's very powerful. Most assumers only rent the powers, so to speak. Larsener can take another epic's abilities permanently. And he can keep as many as he wants. He's got an entire collection of them. If Prof found a clone, it means Larsener grabbed Dead Drop's powers. An epic who could create a decoy of himself, imbue it with his consciousness and powers, then retreat to his real body if the decoy was threatened. I took my gun back from Megan and studied the decoy. It was decomposing quickly now that it had been killed, the skin melting off the bones like a marshmallow slipping off its roasting stick. Undoubtedly, this was how Prof had recognized that he didn't have the real Larsener. Larsener makes other epics very uncomfortable, I explained. They don't like the idea that someone might be able to take their abilities. Fortunately for them, he's not very ambitious, and has always been content to stay in Ildithia. The Coven relied on him, or the idea of him, to keep other epics from moving in on their territory. Megan and Abraham were rolling their eyes at me now. What? I demanded. You look like you just found an old hard drive, Megan said, full of lost songs by your favorite pre-calamity band. This stuff is cool, I grumbled, inspecting Prof. He seemed thoroughly displeased by what he'd discovered in that hole. Now he was contemplating the market, which I could see from out here was packed, like Mizzy had said.
I don't like that look on his face, Abraham said.
Guys, Mizzy said, I think I'm by a wall to the outside. I can see sunlight through it if I squint. Maybe we can get me out that way?
Abraham looked at Megan.
Can you make a portal into another dimension where the wall isn't there?
Megan looked skeptical. I don't know. Most of what I can do is ephemeral, unless I've recently reincarnated. I can trap someone in another world for a time, so long as it's very similar to our own, or pull that world into ours. But they're only shadows, and sometimes things seem to reset after the shadow fades. Prof was on the move, striding toward the marketplace. He snapped his fingers, and Dynamo hurried over to him. A moment later, when Prof spoke, his voice boomed through the area, as loud as if enhanced by a speaker.
I am going to destroy this building,
Prof said, pointing at the market.
And all of those nearby.
Ah, right, a part of me thought. Dynamo. He has sound manipulation. The rest of me was horrified.
Everyone who wishes to live,
Prof continued,
must come out here to the square. Those who run will die. Those who remain will die. You have 5 minutes.
All hail, Cody said over the line. You want me to pop him? Make a distraction?
No, I said. He'd come for you, and we'd trade one problem for another.
I looked at Megan. She nodded. If she created a distraction, and Prof came for her, she'd reincarnate.
Sparks. I hated thinking of her ability to die as some kind of disposable resource. Hopefully we wouldn't need that.
Abraham, fall back and support Cody, I said. If something goes wrong, you two continue with the plan to make a safe house in the city. Be sure he doesn't spot you.
Roger,
Abraham said.
And you two?
We're going to get to Mizzy, I said. Megan, can you conjure up some temporary faces for us?
Not a problem.
She concentrated and changed in a split second, eyes the wrong color, a face that was too round, and hair that was black instead of golden. I assumed I'd undergone a similar transformation. I took a deep breath, then handed my rifle to Abraham. Though I'd seen people in Ildithia carrying guns, mine was far too advanced. It would draw attention.
Let's go, I said, slipping out from behind the cover and joining the groups of people who were, timidly, leaving buildings and the market to stand before Prof. 16. Mizzy was in the parking garage on the other side of the street from us, which presented a problem.
How close do you need to be to give her an illusory face? I whispered to Megan.
The closer the better, she whispered back as we moved into the crowd. Otherwise, I risk catching more people in the ripple between worlds. So we had to cross the street in front of Prof without drawing attention. He was fully in the grip of his powers, so he'd be selfish to the extreme, completely lacking the ability to empathize. It wouldn't matter who we were or what we looked like. If someone inconvenienced him, he'd kill them as easily as another man swatted a mosquito. I slumped my shoulders and pinned my eyes to the ground. The act was still second nature to me. They drilled it into us at the factory. I used it now to become inconspicuous as I stepped away from the mass of other people and headed eastward across the street, moving purposefully, yet careful to keep my posture hunched and subservient. I shot a furtive glance over my shoulder to see if Megan was following, and she was, but she stood out like a hammer in a birthday cake. She was obviously trying to look innocuous, hands shoved in her pockets, but she walked too tall, too unafraid. Sparks. Prof would spot her for certain. I reached out and took her hand, then whispered to her, "You need to be more beaten down, Megan. Pretend you're carrying a lead statue of Buddha on your back." What? "Something heavy," I said. "It's a trick we learned in the factory." She cocked her head at me, but then slouched. That was better, and I was able to enhance it by clinging to her in a frightened way, pushing the back of her head so that she bowed it farther while we walked arm in arm. My shuffling, while acting extra nervous and dodging out of the way of others when they got too close, got us about halfway across the street. But then the press of people grew too great.
"Bow!"
Prof bellowed at us.
"Kneel before your new master!"
The people went down in a wave, and I had to tow Megan with me to follow. Never before in our relationship had the disparity between us been so obvious. Yes, she had epic powers and I didn't, but at the moment, that distinction seemed slight compared to the fact that she obviously had no concept of how to properly cower. I was strong, I fought, and I didn't accept epic rule. But Calamity, I was still human. When an epic spoke, I jumped. And though I seethed inside, when one told me to kneel, I did it. The crowd hushed as more people piled out of the garage, filling the street, kneeling. I couldn't see much with my head down.
"Mizzy,"
I hissed.
"You out yet?"
"Near the back," she whispered over the line. "By a light post with blue ribbons on it. Should I run?"
"No," I said. "He's watching for that."
I glanced up at Prof, who stood imperiously before us, new epic lackey at his side, Stormwind hovering in her prison beyond. Prof scanned the crowd, then turned sharply as someone exited a nearby building and sprinted away. Prof didn't capture her in a globe of force. Instead, he raised his hands to the sides, and two long spears made of light, almost crystalline in shape, appeared and shot toward the fleeing woman. They speared her through, dropping her, crumpled to the street. I swallowed, brow damp with sweat. Prof stepped forward, and something glowing shot out beneath his feet, a pale green force field that made a path for him. His own personal roadway. It elevated him 3 or 4 feet above us, so that when he walked, he didn't have to risk brushing against one of the huddled figures. We crouched lower, and I pulled the earpiece from my ear, worried it might remind him of the Reckoners, though we weren't the only ones to use them. Megan did likewise.
"The fight for Ildithia is over,"
Prof said, his voice still amplified.
"You can see that your most powerful epic master, Stormwind, is mine. Your one-time leader hides as a coward from me. I am your god now. And with my arrival, I create a new order. I do this for your own good. History has proven that men cannot care for themselves.
He stopped uncomfortably close to me on his radiant pathway. I kept my eyes down, sweating. Sparks, I could hear him breathe in before every proclamation. I could have reached out and touched his feet. A man I loved and admired. A man I'd spent half my life studying and hoping to emulate. A man who would kill me without a second thought if he knew I was there.
I will care for you, Prof said, so long as you do not cross me. You are my children, and I, your father.
It's still him, I thought, isn't it? Twisted though they were, those words reminded me of the prof I knew. I recognize you, a voice whispered beside me. I started, turning, and found Firefight kneeling beside me. He wasn't aflame like he had been at the foundry. Right now he looked like a normal man, wearing a business suit with a very narrow tie. He knelt, but did not cower. You're David Charleston, aren't you? Firefight asked. I shivered. Yes. How did you get here? Are we in your world or mine? I don't know, Firefight said. Yours, it would seem. So in this world, you live still. Does he know? He? Firefight faded before he could answer, and I found myself staring at a frightened young man with spiky hair. He seemed baffled that I'd been speaking to him. What had all that been? I glanced toward Megan, who knelt on my other side, then nudged her. She looked at me. What? She mouthed. What was that? I mouthed back. What do you mean? Prof continued to walk through the crowd, a glowing field forming before his feet as he stepped. His path rounded, and he came back along on my other side.
I have need of loyal soldiers, he declared. Who among you wish to serve me and be lords over your inferiors?
About 2 dozen opportunists in the crowd stood up. Serving epics so directly was dangerous. Merely being in their presence could get you killed, but it was also the one way to get ahead in the world. I felt sick to see how eagerly some of the people stood, though the majority of the crowd remained kneeling, too scared or too sensible to throw their lot in with a new epic when he hadn't yet established total dominance. I'd have to ask Megan more about Firefight later. For now, I had a plan. Kind of. I took a deep breath, then stood up. Megan glanced at me, then stood as well.
What are we doing? She mouthed. This will let us move through the crowd, I mouthed back. It's the only way to get to Mizzy.
Prof stood on his glowing walkway, hands behind his back. He studied the people in the crowd, surveying them. He turned about, looking directly at the two of us, and I swallowed nervously. This could be a way to weed out those whose loyalty was too fleeting. His next step could be to kill those of us who had stood. No, I knew Prof. He'd realize that in murdering those most eager to serve, he'd have trouble finding servants in the future. He was a leader, a builder. Even as an epic, he wouldn't discard useful resources unless he considered them a threat. Right?
Good, Prof said. Good. I have a task for you all.
He held his hands out, and I thought I felt something vibrate. A familiar sensation from the days months ago, when I'd worn the gloves and used Prof's power. I towed Megan to the side as Prof released a wave of power over the top of the crowd. The air warped, and the entire parking garage behind us exploded to salt dust. People screamed and dropped through the collapsing powder.
Go,
Prof said, waving toward the destruction of the parking garage.
Execute those still living who disobeyed my will and hid as cowards.
The 20-something of us jumped into motion. Though the drop had already hurt or killed those on the upper 2 floors of the garage, there would be others who hadn't fallen far. or who were hiding in the underground portion. Prof turned to resume his inspection of the crowd. That gave Megan and me our opening. We veered, using the pole Mizzy had indicated as a reference point. There she was, huddling down with a hoodie. I had no idea where she'd gotten it, covering her head. She glanced at us, and I gave her a thumbs up. She didn't hesitate. She sprang to her feet and joined us. And in an eye blink, Megan had changed Mizzy's features to something similar but unrecognizable. "Megan," I said. "See that wall over there?" she said. "The one by the ramp leading to where the garage used to be? I'll create duplicates of us once we reach it. When they appear, drop down by the wall." "Got it," I said, and Mizzy nodded. We hit the location indicated, a salt ramp that now ended abruptly to our left. One version of the three of us split off and started up the ramp. The duplicates wore our clothing and had the same fake faces we'd been wearing. Three people from another reality, living in Ildithia. It hurt my brain sometimes to wonder how all this worked. Those faces Megan had overlaid us with. Did that mean these three were doing the same things we were? Were they versions of us? Or were they completely different people who had somehow ended up living lives very like our own? The three of us, the real three, dropped and ducked behind the wall as our doppelgangers reached the edge of the ramp and hopped off. We were shielded from Prof and the crowd by this wall, but I still felt horribly conspicuous as we army-crawled across the ground toward an alleyway. A gust of wind carried dust across us, and it stuck to my face, tasting sharply of salt. I still wasn't used to how dry it was in this city. My throat felt ragged from just breathing. We made it to the alley without incident, and our doppelgangers disappeared into the pits of the destroyed parking garage. I wiped the dust from my skin as Mizzy made a face, sticking out her tongue. "Yuck." Megan settled on the ground beside the wall, looking exhausted. I knelt beside her, and she grabbed my arm and closed her eyes. "I'm fine," she whispered. She'd still need time to rest, so I gave it to her. I didn't miss that she started rubbing her temples to try to massage away a headache. I knelt by the edge of the alleyway so I could make sure we were safe. Prof continued to walk among the crowd, passing the place where Mizzy had been hiding. He occasionally made someone look up and meet his gaze. "He must have a list of descriptions of epics," I thought, "or other malcontents in the city." He was here for a purpose. I couldn't believe that Prof had randomly picked Ildithia to rule, and I was increasingly suspicious that the secrets to why he did what he did came from the things he'd found when he'd taken power from Regalia. "I didn't lure Jonathan here to kill him, child," Regalia's voice echoed in my head. "I did it because I need a successor." What did Ildithia hide that had drawn Prof's attention? Behind me, Mizzy gave Abraham and Cody an update. I kept my attention on Prof. He looked not unlike Steelheart, who, though taller and more muscular, had stood frequently in that same domineering pose. Out in the square, a baby started crying. My breath caught. I spotted the woman clutching her baby, not far from where Prof stood. She frantically tried to soothe the child. Prof raised his hand toward her, a look of annoyance on his face. The sound had jarred him out of his contemplations, and he sneered toward the disturbance. "No." He learned quickly. Don't bother the epics. Don't draw attention. Don't annoy them. They'd kill a man for the simplest of things. "Please." I didn't dare breathe. I was in another place for a moment. Another crying child. A hushed room. I looked into Prof's face, and despite the distance, I was certain I saw something there. A struggle. He spun and stalked away, leaving the woman and her child alone, barking at his new epic lackey. The force field sphere holding Stormwind trailed after him, and he left a bewildered crowd. "We ready to go?" Megan asked, standing up. I nodded, letting out a long, relieved breath. There was still something human inside Jonathan Phaedrus. 17.
I did see him, Megan, I said, unzipping my backpack. I'm telling you, Firefight was there in the crowd.
I'm not doubting you, she said, leaning against the pink saltstone wall of our new hideout.
Point of fact, I said, I believe you were doing exactly that.
What I said is that I didn't pull him through.
Then who did?
She shrugged.
Can you be absolutely sure he didn't slip through? I said, taking several changes of clothing out of my pack and kneeling by the trunk that was going to be my sole piece of furniture. I stuffed the clothing inside, then looked at her.
On occasion, when I pull a shadow from another world, the fringes bleed, Megan admitted. It usually only happens when I've just reincarnated, when my powers are at their fullest.
What about when you're stressed or tired?
Never before, she said. But, well, there are a lot of things I haven't tried.
I looked up at her.
Why not? Because.
Because why? You have amazing reality-defying powers, Megan. Why not experiment?
You know, David, she said. You sure can be stupid sometimes. You have lists of powers, but you don't have any idea what it's like to be an epic.
What do you mean?
She sighed, then settled down on the floor next to me. There were no beds or couches yet. Our new hideout wouldn't ever be as lush as the one in Babalar had been, but it was as secure as we could make it. We'd built it ourselves over the past few days, hiding it as one of the large, cancerous lumps of salt that grew across Ildithia. I'd given Megan some time at first, not wanting to push her about Firefight. She was often evasive for a few days after she used her powers strenuously, as if even thinking about the powers gave her a headache.
Most epics aren't like Steelheart or Regalia, Megan explained. Most epics are small-time bullies, men and women with just enough power to be dangerous, and just enough taste of the darkness to not care who they hurt. They didn't like me. Well, epics don't like most anybody, but me especially. My powers frightened them. Other realities? Other versions of them? They hated that they couldn't define limits to what I could do. But at the same time, my powers couldn't protect me. Not actively, so...
So? I asked, scooting closer, putting my arm around her.
So they killed me, she said, shrugging. I dealt with it, learned to be more subtle with my powers. It wasn't until Steelheart took me in that I had any kind of security. He always did see the promise of what I did, rather than the threat. Anyway, it's like I've told you. I took what my dad had taught my sisters and me about guns, and I became an expert. I learned to use guns to mask the fact that my powers couldn't hurt anyone. I hid what I could truly do, became Steelheart's spy. But no. I didn't experiment. I didn't want people to know what I could do. Didn't even want him to know the extent of my powers. Life has taught me that if people learn too much about me, I end up dead.
And reincarnating, I said, trying to be encouraging.
Yeah. Unless it's not me that comes back, but just a copy from another dimension. Similar, but different. David... What if the person you fell in love with really did die in New Kago? What if I'm some kind of imposter?
I pulled her close, uncertain what to say.
I keep wondering, she whispered. Is next time going to be the time? The time I come back and am obviously different? Will I be reborn with a different hair color? Will I be reborn with a different accent? Or with a sudden distaste for this food or that? Will you know then, once and for all, that the one you loved is dead?
You, I said, tipping her chin up to look her in the eye, are a sunrise. She cocked her head.
A sunrise?
Yup.
Not a potato?
Not right now.
Not a hippo?
No.
Wait, when did I call you a hippo?
Last week. You were drowsy.
Sparks didn't remember that one.
No, I said firmly. You're a sunrise.
I spent 10 years without sunrises, but I always remembered what they looked like. Back before we lost our home and Dad still had a job, a friend would let us come up to the observation deck of a skyscraper in the morning. It had a dramatic view of the city and lake. We'd watch the sun come up. I smiled. It was a good memory, me and my father eating bagels and enjoying the morning cold. He'd always make the same joke.
Yesterday, son, I wanted to watch the sunrise, but I just wasn't up for it.
Some days, the only time he'd been able to make for me had been in the morning. But he'd always done it. He'd gotten up an hour earlier than he needed to get to work. And he'd done it after working well into the night. All for me.
So am I going to get to hear this glorious metaphor? Megan said. I'm twinkling with anticipation.
Well, see, I said. I would watch the sunrise and wish I could capture the moment. I never could. Pictures didn't work. The sunrises never looked as spectacular on film. And eventually I realized a sunrise isn't a moment. It's an event. You can't capture a sunrise because it changes constantly. Between eye blinks, the sun moves, the clouds swirl. It's continually something new.
We're not moments, Megan, you and me. We're events. You say you might not be the same person you were a year ago? Well, who is? I'm sure not. We change, like swirling clouds and a rising sun. The cells in me have died, and new ones were born. My mind has changed, and I don't feel the thrill of killing epics I once did. I'm not the same David. Yet I am.
I met her eyes and shrugged.
I'm glad you're not the same, Megan. I don't want you to be the same. My Megan is a sunrise, always changing, but beautiful the entire time. She teared up.
That, she breathed in. Wow. Aren't you supposed to be bad at this?
Well, you know what they say, I told her, grinning. Even a clock that runs fast is still right twice a day.
Actually, you know what? Never mind. Thank you.
She kissed me. Sometime later, I stumbled from my quarters, ran a hand through my disheveled hair, and went to get something to drink. Cody was on the other side of the hallway, finishing the hideout's roof there with the crystal-growing device that Nighthawk had given us. It looked kind of like a trowel, the kind you'd use to smooth concrete or plaster. When you pulled it along the salt, the crystal structure would extend and create a sheet of new salt. With the glove that came with the device, you could mold that new salt how you wanted for a short time, until it hardened and stayed strong. We called it Herman. Well, I called it Herman, and nobody else had come up with something better. We'd used it to grow this entire building in an alleyway over the course of 2 nights, expanding upon a large lump of salt that had grown there already. This place was on the northern rim of the city, which was still growing, so that the half-finished structure wouldn't look odd. The nearly finished hideout was tall and thin, going up 3 narrow stories. In places, I could reach out and touch both walls at once. We'd made the outside of it look like lumps of rock to match the other growths like this in the city. All in all, we'd decided we preferred a place that was more secure, built ourselves, rather than moving into one of the houses out there. I headed down the steep pink crystal steps to the next level, the kitchen, or at least where we'd set up a hot plate and water jug, along with a few small appliances powered by one of the Jeep's power cells.
"Finally done unpacking?"
Mizzy asked me, wandering by with the coffee pot. I stopped on the bottom step. Actually, I hadn't finished.
"Too busy smooching, eh?" Mizzy said. You do realize that without doors we can kinda hear everything. Yeah. I wish there were a rule against team members making out and stuff. But Prof would never have done that, considering that him and Tia were a thing.
A thing?
It's a word you probably should never say again, she said, handing me a cup of coffee. Abraham wanted to see you. I set the coffee aside and got a cup of water instead. I could never see why people drank that stuff. It tasted like soil boiled in mud with a topping of dirt. You still have my old mobile? I asked Mizzy as she climbed the steps. The one Obliteration broke? Yep, though it's cracked pretty good. Saved it for parts. Grab it for me, will you? She nodded. I climbed down to the ground floor, where we'd stashed most of our supplies. Abraham knelt in one of the two rooms here, lit only by the light of his mobile. The upper two floors had hidden skylights and windows, but not much filtered down this far. We'd built him a work table here out of a salt stone, and he was going over the team's weapons one at a time, cleaning and checking them. Most of us were perfectly willing to do it on our own, but, well, there was something comforting about knowing that Abraham had approved your gun. Besides, my Gottschalk was no simple hunting rifle. With electron-compressed magazines, hyper-advanced scope, and electronic systems that hooked into my mobile, I would be able to do only the basics on my own. It was the difference between putting ketchup on your hot dog and decorating a cake. Best to let an expert take over. Abraham nodded to me, then waved toward his pack nearby on the floor, which hadn't been completely unloaded.
I brought something back for you during my trip out to the jeeps.
Curious, I walked over and rummaged in the pack. I pulled out a skull. Made entirely of steel, it reflected the mobile's light with its eerie, smooth contours. The jaw was missing. That had been separated from it in the blast that had killed this man, the man who had named himself Steelheart. I stared into those eye sockets. If I had known then that there was a chance of redeeming Epics, would I have pushed forward with my insistence on killing him? Even now, holding this skull made me think of my father. So hopeful, so confident that the Epics would turn out to be the saviors of mankind, not its destroyers. Steelheart, in murdering my father, represented the ultimate betrayal of that hope.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that, Abraham said. I threw it in at the last minute, because there was space.
I frowned, then set the skull on a salt shelf overhead. I dug farther in the pack and located a heavy metal box.
Sparks, Abraham! You carried this in?
I cheated, he said, snapping the trigger guard assembly onto my rifle. Gravitonics at the bottom of my pack.
I grunted, lugging out the box. I thought I recognized it.
An imager.
Thought you might want one, Abraham said, to set up the plan, like we used to do.
Prof would often call the team into a room to go over our plans, and he used this device to project ideas and images onto the walls. I wasn't nearly that organized. I turned on the imager anyway, plugging it into the power cell Abraham was using. The imager scattered light through the room. It wasn't calibrated to this location, so some of the images were fuzzy and distorted. It showed Prof's notes, scribbled lines of text, as if made in chalk on a black background. I walked to the wall and felt at some of the scribbled writings. They smudged as if real, and my hand made no shadow on the wall. The imager wasn't like an ordinary projector. I read through some of the notes, but there was little of relevance here. These were from when we'd been fighting Steelheart. Only one sentence struck me. Is it right? Three solitary words, alone in their own corner. The rest of the writing was cramped, words fighting with one another for space like too many fish in a tiny tank. But these sat on their own. I looked back at Steelheart's skull. The imager had interpreted it as part of the room and had projected words across its surface.
How's the plan? Abraham asked. I assume you have something brewing?
A few things, I said. They're kind of random,
I'd expect nothing less,
Abraham said, a hint of a smile on his lips, as he affixed the stock onto the Gottschalk.
Shall I gather the others into one of the rooms so we can talk about it?
Sure, I said. Grab them, but not in one of the rooms. He looked at me, questioning. I knelt and switched off the imager. Maybe we'll use this another day. For now, I want to go for a walk instead. 18. Mizzy tossed me the broken mobile as she joined the rest of us on the street outside our hideout. We kept the place hidden by slipping out through a secret door into the mostly abandoned apartment building next to us. It housed no family, only loners who couldn't find their own to join, which we hoped would make them pay less attention to strangers like us. Security set up? I asked Mizzy.
Yep. We'll know if anyone tries to enter the place.
Abraham? I asked. He shook his pack, which contained our data pads, our extra power cells, and the two pieces of Epic-derived equipment that Nighthawk had given us. If someone did rob our hideout, all they'd get away with were a few guns, which were replaceable.
That was under 5 minutes, Cody said. Not bad.
Abraham shrugged, but seemed pleased. This hideout was far less secure than others we'd used. That meant either leaving at least two of us behind to guard at all times, or coming up with a routine pull-out protocol when we went on operations. I liked the second idea far better. It would let us field larger teams in the city without worrying. Either way, we'd had Mizzy set up some sensors on the door that, if opened, would send our mobiles warnings. I slung my rifle over my shoulder. Abraham had scuffed it up, then painted over a few portions to make it look both more battered and less advanced at the same time. That should help me not draw attention. Each of us wore a new face, granted by Megan. It was early afternoon, and I found it odd how many people were about. Some hung laundry, others walked to or from the market. A large number were carrying possessions in sacks, having been ousted from the decaying side of the city and sent in search of someplace new to live. This sort of thing seemed constant in Ildithia. Someone was always moving house. I didn't see anyone alone. The kids playing ball in an empty lot were watched by no fewer than 4 elderly men and women. Those heading to market went in pairs or groups. People congregated on steps up to houses, and quite a few had rifles nearby, though they laughed and smiled. It was a strange kind of peace. The atmosphere implied that so long as everyone stuck to their own business, everyone would get along. I was disturbed to see how many of the groups seemed segregated along racial lines, though. Our group with mixed ethnicities was irregular.
So, lad,
Cody said, walking beside me with hands shoved into the pockets of his camo pants.
Why are we out on the street again? I was planning on a wee nap this afternoon.
I didn't like the idea of being cooped up, I said. We're here to save this city. I don't want to sit and plan in a sterile little room away from the people. Sterile little rooms are secure, Megan said from behind, where she walked with Abraham. Mizzy was to my right, humming to herself. I shrugged. We could still talk and not be overheard. People on the street kept to themselves and gave way when others approached them. The smaller groups actually demanded more respect. When one person did pass walking alone, everyone moved to the other side of the street in a subtle motion. A solo man or woman might be an epic. This, I said as we walked, is what passes for a functional society these days. Each group with their territory, each with an implicit threat of violence. This isn't a city. It's 1,000 communities, one step from war with one another. It's the best the world has to offer. We're going to change that once and for all. And it starts with Prof. How do we save him? Make him confront his weakness, Mizzy said. Somehow. We have to find it first, Megan noted. I have a plan for that, I said. What? Really? Megan asked, moving up so she was walking beside Cody. How? I held out the broken phone and wiggled it.
Folks, Cody said. Looks like the lad's finally snapped and gone completely mental. I take full credit.
I got out my working mobile and wrote a text to Nighthawk. Hey,
I've got a mobile with a broken screen here. Battery is in, though. Can you still track it?
He didn't respond immediately.
Let's assume that I can discover Prof's weakness, I said. Where do we go from there?
Hard to say,
Abraham answered. He was carefully watching everyone else on the street as we made our way down it.
The nature of the weakness often defines the plan's shape. It could take months to perfect the right approach.
I strongly doubt that we have months, I said.
I agree, Abraham said. Prof has plots of his own, and he's been here for weeks already. We don't know why he is here, but we certainly don't want to wait around and see. We need to stop him quickly.
Besides, I added, the longer we wait, the greater the chance Prof will notice us.
I think you're trying to do things backward, lad, Cody said, shaking his head. We can't plot anything without the weakness.
Though, perhaps,
Abraham started. I looked at him.
We do have something of a trump card, he said,
nodding toward Megan.
We have a team member who can make anything real. Perhaps we can begin planning a trap with the assumption that whatever he fears, Megan can create it.
That's a leap, Mizzy said. What if he fears, I don't know, a sentient taco?
I could probably make that, Megan said.
Okay, fine. What if he fears being afraid, or being proven wrong, or something else abstract? Don't a lot of weaknesses come from things like that?
Mizzy was right. The rest of us fell silent. We passed an old fast food place on the left, crafted from a beautiful shade of blue salt. More of this region slowly bled to that color as we walked. I didn't lead us anywhere in particular yet. We'd want to do some intel gathering later today, which was standard Reckoner protocol after securing a base. For now, I wanted to be out, to be moving, walking, talking, thinking. My mobile buzzed. Sorry, Nighthawk said. Was taking a koala. What's this about another mobile? You said you could track mobiles, I wrote to him. Well, I've got a broken one here. Can you pinpoint it? Leave it somewhere, he wrote. Then move on. Your signals are all too close together. I did what he said, setting the mobile on an old trash can and leading the others off a ways. Yeah, that one is working enough to send a signal, he wrote. Why? I'll tell you in a bit, I sent, jogging back to get the broken phone. From there I turned the team left, heading down a larger street. Some of the salt signs hanging above us had already been knocked down and broken, even though we were in a part of the city that was freshly grown. All right, I said, taking a deep breath. We can't talk specifics about fighting Prof until we get the weakness, but there are still things to plan. For example, we need to figure out how to get him to face his fear, not run from it. In my case, Megan said, hands in her jacket pockets, I had to enter a burning building to try to save you, David. That meant I had to be sane enough, away from the powers long enough, that I wanted to save you. That's not a lot to go on, Mizzy said. I don't mean to be negative, but man, don't you think we're leaning too much on what happened to one person? I remained silent. I hadn't talked to anyone but Megan about it, but something similar had happened to me. I had been granted epic powers by Regalia. It had something to do with Calamity, and her relationship with him had allowed her to assert that I would become an epic. Those powers hadn't ever manifested. Right before that moment, I'd faced the depths of the waters in an attempt to get out and save Megan and the team. There was a connection there. Face your fears. And what? For Megan, it had meant some control over the darkness. For me, it had made the powers never manifest in the first place. We should get more data, I admitted. Cody, I still want to talk to Edmund.
You think he went through the same thing?
It's worth asking.
We've got him hidden away in a safe house outside New Cargo, Cody said. A place we set up after you and Prof left. I'll get you in touch with him.
I nodded, and we continued in silence. If nothing else, this meeting had helped me define my goals for Eldithia. Step one, find Prof's weakness. Step two, use it to negate his powers long enough for him to come to his senses. Step three, contrive a way that he has to confront and overcome that weakness. We turned another corner and then pulled to a stop. I'd been intending to wind us around toward the outer sections of town, but the path in front of us was blocked off. It must have taken a great deal of effort to move the barricade of metal chains and posts every week, but judging by the men atop the building beyond, armed with wicked-looking rifles, this force had plenty of manpower. As a group, without needing to say a word, we turned and walked the other way.
"Epic stronghold," Cody guessed. "Someone Prof has already subdued, or a neutral party?" "That's probably Loophole's place,"
Abraham said, thoughtful.
"She was always one of the most powerful epics in the city."
"Size manipulation powers, right?" I asked. Abraham nodded.
"Don't know how she fell into the conflict between Prof and Larsener."
"Look into it," I told him. But this raised another issue. "We might want to plan to deal with Larsener. I don't want to get so focused on Prof that we ignore the turf war in Eldithia." "Well," Mizzy said, "if only we had access to someone with a freakishly large repository of knowledge about epics, and who can't help but tell us about them. Like, all the time." "Well, it is my thing." "What did I tell you about that word, David?" I smiled. "Larsener. By all reports, he was a teenager when Calamity rose. Maybe even a kid. One of the youngest high epics. He's probably in his early 20s right now. He's tall.